anything changed now? Sweet liberty.
To Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. It is Wednesday, the 13th of December in the year 2006. And the time flies, doesn't it, folks? I'm glad you're with us tonight. We're having some global warming weather here in Millerton. It's been 50 and 52 degrees here. A lot of people think it's really wonderful. However, I think about how confusing it must be to our perennial plants, the trees. They go to sleep for the winter, and next thing you know, they're waking up, and sap begins to flow, and then it freezes again. And while I appreciate not having to spend a lot of very high-priced energy to keep warm, I think it would be better if we had normal winter weather. I'm going to start here, of course, with our spiritual message. This is from The Course in Miracles, from the text, page 271. In this world, you can become a spotless mirror in which the holiness of your Creator shines forth from you to all around you. You can reflect heaven here. And ladies and gentlemen, I told you last week about our guest this evening. I've talked to you about the book, God's Genes and Consciousness. I've read you some excerpts from it. And there's too much in this book. I would like to read the whole thing to you, but that would be just absolutely impossible. And besides that, when it's being read to you, it's not the same as looking at it yourself on the pages. And we're privileged tonight to have the author of this book with us, Paul Von Ward. And Paul, thanks so much for being here tonight.
Jackie, I'm delighted to be with you from the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains here in North Georgia.
Well, I know you're busy. I've been in your website, Paul, and you do speaking tours, and you're in the process right now of finishing a book, I guess, on
That's
reincarnation.
Right.
So I appreciate you taking your time out to speak to us tonight. I wonder if, before we get started into our conversation, will you give our listeners a short review of your background, Paul, and how did you get into the area, the arena of the research for writing God's Genes and Consciousness?
Well, okay. I started out as a country boy in the northwest Florida woods. Back in 1939, we were so far back in the woods, there were no woods behind us. And that's pretty far out, but it was still the Depression era in that part of the country, and we stayed in that through World War II. Very early on, was very much involved in the local Southern Baptist Church in my little community, welcomed in by the families there who sort of brought me, because my parents were not church affiliated at that time, and I got caught up in the theology of that denomination and went on to become ordained as a Southern Baptist minister and had a church outside of Tallahassee, Florida when I was at Florida State University.
And
however, by the time...
How long were you a minister there, Paul?
Well, I actually served this little church only about a year and a half while I was in graduate school, finishing a master's degree and clinical psychology before I went into the Navy, went to Officer Candidate School in 1962. As people may remember, that was the beginning of our involvement in a significant way in Vietnam, and I was in the Navy on active duty for about 3.5 years before I was appointed by President Johnson to be a U.S. Foreign Service officer and to serve in our diplomatic corps overseas. So that kept me from my next assignment in the Navy, which was to have a swift boat command on the Mekong River in 1966. People who remember the 2004 election remember there was a lot of discussion about another such person who had a tour of duty there. I missed that and went into the Foreign Service and served overseas in France and Paris and Martinique and Sierra Leone and West Africa and the Dominican Republic and in Washington with a NATO job for a tour of duty and several other offices in Washington in the State Department.
Well, you've been in some high places.
Well, I've been in government. I was in the military and the government for almost 20 years, and then I left the State Department in 1980, and I found that I no longer could really feel comfortable working in the government where I did not share a lot of the policies that were promulgated by the various administrations. And I left the government and started a nonprofit organization called Delphi International, which was an international education exchange organization for promoting understanding across cultures and initiatives that might lead us towards international peace. I did that for about 15 years, but during all that time in the graduate school in clinical psychology, and I spent a another period up at Harvard in the middle of that, got another master's degree in the area of psychology and public administration. And in that educational period at universities, in the Navy, in the ministry, in the Foreign Service, I always felt that reality was much bigger and much more complex than our institutions believed in. I somehow had a knowing really back to my conversion into Christianity at age 12. I followed the norms of that community and culture that I grew up in, but even from the very beginning I was posing questions and raising questions about the inconsistencies in the logic of the worldviews of these institutions. And so I quit it all about 10 or 11 years ago to spend my time full-time research and writing on things that I had actually been doing research on for many years overseas and in the States, on the inner realities that we humans experience with our inner senses, our inner ways of knowing, the subtle energies that we have and use in connections with other people, with other species, with the universal consciousness of the cosmos, and also the evidence for other beings more advanced than humans in this universe. And those two areas of interest, of course, were not compatible with the institutions that I was a member of.
I wouldn't think so.
So the folks who were my colleagues in all of those institutions in the past now think I'm rather way overboard, gone off the deep end. Although I think as the years go on, and as you talked about God's Genes and Consciousness, which is the fourth book I've put out, and many, many articles and talks and lectures and presentations over the years, some of my colleagues are actually in their older age beginning to come around and say, well, Paul, how about sitting down and tell us what this work is you're doing? I find that, you know, at a human level, we all know that there's more to it than meets the eye.
Than meets the eye, and that we've been told. I'd like to say this. You and I talked for maybe 10 minutes. You know, when I first invited you to come on, and then I got reading your bio and I thought, oh my God, this guy's an insider. What am I doing?
Used to be an insider who's been who has put himself on the outside, and I don't think they'll let me back in.
Oh, that's great. I love that.
I don't have a security clearance anymore.
Do you know that I have felt so nervous tonight about hope. Am I doing the right thing? Am I bringing somebody into their midst that's, you know, all connected up there? And Paul, thank you for just giving us this background, and it's a big relief for me, I must tell you. I've been wanting to email you wait a minute, how do you know this, and how did you get there? It doesn't matter. You got out of it.
Well, you know, I like to think about our lives really having some sort of inner-driven purpose.
Oh, I hope so.
To them. And I don't believe in predestination. I don't believe in some divine being controlling our destinies and controlling our lives. As you know from reading my book, and if you've looked at the other book before the God Changing Conscious One, Our Solarian Legacy, it's very much on the cosmology that I come from, which is that we live in a natural universe of many dimensions, of many species, and that we humans are part of that consciousness, whatever you want to call it by whatever word, that is the creative origin, the creative source of all that is.
Yes.
And we're direct manifestations of that. And I also, as you mentioned earlier about my book that I'm working on reincarnation, I believe myself in reincarnation. I believe in a soul that's transcendent, that we have a soul that is beyond the space and time that we and our physical body inhabit. And I believe we have inner senses that communicate with all of those other dimensions and other beings. And I believe that we have subtle energies that connect us with all life in the universe and all consciousness in the universe. But having said that, I also believe that we as individual beings, as individual manifestations of that universal creative force that's the source of everything, means that we have a level of choice and free will within this context that means that we, in this interaction between our transcendent soul and our daily conscious awareness, determine our own path and our own journey, and we make decisions as we go along.
Non-intervention.
So my non-intervention, the God, the source, the creator that I imagine, would have no need for a bunch of sheep who run around and follow his or her or its direction. So what's the purpose of having a marvelous universe like this unless it serves the purpose of the whole, which in my view is the conscious open evolution of the universe? It's an open-ended universe that the creator itself has no idea how it's going to end up, because all of us creatures are feeding into the mix. And what we do and say and feel adds our own bit every day. And I truly believe that, you know, when you take all the life forces and all of the galaxies and all the species that inhabit those galaxies, that we're all working as parts of a huge organism, but in our own way, making our own decisions that affect the direction and the qualitative characteristics of that universe as it evolves. I know that's a lot of big words.
Oh, no, it isn't. You know, I was wondering, have you written this someplace, what you just said, Paul?
Yeah, it's in the book, Our Solarian
Legacy. Oh, because I was just thinking this just said it all.
Yeah, I've tried to, in that book, to deal with the question of cosmology, you know.
Cosmology. What is the definition?
Well, cosmology is the study, the effort to study, the origins and functioning of the universe.
I think I might be a cosmologist.
Well, we all are at some level or the other.
Yeah.
Because anybody who thinks about, what am I doing here? Where did I come from?
Where am I going?
The purpose? Where are we going? These sort of existential questions of life that the great philosophers have talked about. Well, hell, you know, all of us as individuals, think about the same questions. So we're all cosmologists.
Do you know how long ago those questions came into my mind, Paul?
Probably when you were a child.
One of them, from my very earliest memories.
Yeah.
I wanted to know those things.
Well, we all do, because, see, I believe, and I have written this and talked about it many times, I believe that when a conscious species first becomes self-aware, then it poses these questions. You know, when the earliest humans and when the smallest child becomes aware that he or she is a self-reflective being, then you question, well, what am I doing here? Where did I come from? Where am I going?
You know, it scared me. When I was little, we lived in a housing project, and actually my family's, quote, religion was Lutheran, but there was a little Baptist church there in the project, so they put us on the Sunday school bus, Mom and Dad, and let us go to Sunday school there, and it just scared the hell out of me, Paul. You know, I'm serious. For God so loved the world, he sent his only begotten son. So then I laid in bed and wondered, well, if Jesus is God's own son, who am I? What am I? And then I wondered,
well,
you know, all of those questions, it frightened me.
Well, it frightens a lot of, the questions frighten people because they don't know the answers or they don't feel comfortable with the answers that they have at the moment. And so what people do is to grasp onto myths. And the myths of Christianity are some of the most misleading myths about the nature of reality that I've ever come across. Now, there are other myths out there that also lead us astray. Most of the supernatural religions, the three Western ones, Judaism, Islam, and Christianity, all have similar myths that lead us away from what I think is the reality of our relationship with the Creator and our relationship with the universe.
And you know what's so slick about those three religions? They all lead people eventually into the same whatever it is that they're aiming for. It's like each of the religions seem to be converging.
Well, they converge because, see, the function of a religious institution, which is not a natural spirituality sort of orientation, is to convince people through the various stories and myths that they promulgate, you know, in the teachings and the rituals and the writings and so on, is to create a dependency on the leaders of the religion to serve as the conduits to the answer to all these questions, which is, you know, the truth as that religion defines the truth.
And by that convergence, it really leads to their one world religion, doesn't it?
Well, it's one of those sort of paradoxes there. It's one world religion at one level of generality, that is a supernatural human-created belief in a divine realm that cannot be proven or cannot be convincingly presented to someone who's not a believer. So at that level, they're all one.
Yeah.
Then at the very lowest level, they are fragmented like all the pieces of Humpty Dumpty.
Yes, and okay.
See, we have several thousand denominations in Christianity. We have hundreds of various sects in Judaism. We have, as is so well known to everybody listening from the television and radio reports today, in Islam they are broken into fragmentations, fighting one another between the Shias and the Sunnis, just the way the Catholics and the Protestants have fought over the years, just the way the Orthodox Jews and the Reformed Jews have fought among themselves over the years, on and on. What we've done is it's a generic supernaturalism at one level, and it is just dog-eat-dog at another level, as people try to proselytize and convert and bring people into their own faith. And what happens, of course, is that because you can't prove your claims about divinity, that means those claims are subject to interpretation. And therefore, when different charismatic leaders start giving their different interpretations, then that divides the sect or the cult into two sects or two cults or two denominations or two themes or what have you. So it's like a fractal, you know, pattern. It just spins farther and farther into greater and greater breakdown of
between
the,
between
common.
People.
Yep.
The breakdown and between the, people, Paul.
And the breakdown, then, you see, can be manipulated by political demagogues, by autocrats, by charismatic leaders of any sort, to psychologically manipulate people to follow the leader.
Yeah, everybody wants a guru.
Well, that's because we don't, you know, we've been taught that we need a guru. Although, you know, the teacher, the human teacher Jesus, to the extent that we know what he actually said, we don't have any record of his direct conversations and talks, but inferring
right.
to the best that we can, you know, he said, it's up to you, every person, you know, God is in you, you are God.
Yeah.
It's up to you to figure out for yourself what you should do. Don't look to me, don't look to somebody else. And this is the whole thing that the Gnostics were
about.
But
he certainly
you know.
Gave some wonderful blueprints for people to follow, didn't he?
Well, I wouldn't say blueprints, but he gave some principles.
Principles,
that
okay,
very,
that's better.
Well, blueprint sounds like an overall...
Well, you know, my blueprint, I guess, in my mind, is do unto others
well,
as you would have others do unto you. To me, that
and
is...
the greatest of these...
It is like a blueprint.
Love thy neighbor as thyself.
Right,
yeah.
And the other one is not like a blueprint, but that to me, the greatest truth and the greatest, the most beautiful, perfect justice... that as you sow, so shall you reap.
But you know, that that was here long before Jesus.
Yes.
All of those principles, and the reason I don't want to, you know, debate with you about the difference between principle and blueprint, the reason I don't use the word blueprint is because, you know, in the fundamentalist religious community, the notion of blueprint is God's blueprint for your life. All you have to do is buy into it and then you're home free.
Okay.
Because that means sort of, the blueprint's like to build a whole house. You know, it's the picture of everything, the walls and how it all fits together and so on. Whereas the principles of building a house are very different. You know, they are, provide simplicity, provide functionality, provide the parts that integrate with one another, and so as above, so below. Love thy neighbor as thyself. Do unto others as thou wouldst have done to you. These are principles that will result in a variety of kinds of lives. You see, they will result in a multiplicity of lives. I'm very excited about the breakdown in a lot of institutions in our society at the moment.
Like?
Because that's unleashing individual creativity.
What
all
do you
of
mean,
us.
Breakdowns in various institutions? Would you give me an example?
Well, I mean, the church is one of them, you know. All the fragmentation that we've been talking about.
Oh, okay, I see what you're saying.
One of the things that does, it does give a lot of room for different ideas and different interpretations. And because there's not one overriding dogma, you know, controlling millions of people, then there's room for different interpretations.
Okay.
So to me, that's helpful. That when another breakdown in the institutions, we have totally lost faith in this society, in the institutions of the federal government. The ineptness of the federal government, the misleading propaganda of the federal government and so on has led to a breakdown in the institution of the relationship of citizens and their own government. And what this is doing is this is causing people then to ask questions. Well, what should it be? What should my relationship be? What should I do? What should be my contribution to the future of this country? Rather than just saying, well, we're going to leave it up to them. So that's what I mean about the breakdown. People know that they're not working. Now, the Catholic Church has been through this. I mean, this whole business of the abuse by the priesthood of many young men and women. That's an example of the breakdown of an institution so that people know now that that institution is not a divinely created perfect organism
right.
by God.
Don't you think
it
that's...
is a human organism with all the foibles and weaknesses of...
But don't you think that's by design, Paul?
By design?
Well, in other words, it seems to me that the religions, for example, Christianity, when people began to realize the lies that they've been told that they were born into,
mm-hmm.
There's a tendency to just give up the baby with the bathwater. In other
mm-hmm.
words, it's all lies, so to hell with it, you know, nothing matters, and the quote, there's no God, creator, et cetera, et cetera. Have you read the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion?
No, I've read
well,
part of
I
that.
Well, I want you really to know that everything you were just saying was protracted there, was said that this is exactly what's going to happen. That was 100 years ago. Over 100 years ago.
Well, but see, when you say that this is happening by design, by whose design?
I don't know.
Well, see, that's...
Maybe the priesthood, maybe the force, or whatever it is within individuals, this is it. Really what it does, in my mind, is bring us into the book. Because, Paul... how could 100 years ago something be written that says we're going to cause such chaos that the people are going to lose faith in their governments? It's written there in the protocols. And I know it says it's the elders of Zion. I don't know what that means, and I'm not getting into some, you know, thing here.
Right, yeah.
But that was written 100 years ago. And
yeah, but the
breaking
things have
been... it down to cause the chaos so they can bring their form of order in. I know their plan doesn't necessarily have to succeed. If I thought it was going to, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. I'd be out tap dancing or something. But what I'm saying is it seems from those types of writings that this plan has been laid out long ago and it's being manipulated somehow. It's like Russia. You know, when that thing happened in the Soviet Union, and it was on television. People think, you know, that was a spontaneous thing. It wasn't spontaneous.
What event are you talking about now?
Well, you know, when in the Soviet Union, when they had the big...
the nuclear explosion at Chernobyl?
No, not the Chernobyl thing, when the government was overtaken, and it was all televised. And
oh,
then,
you mean when the attack on the White House?
On the Duma, or whatever they call
sure,
it?
Sure, sure.
Well,
yeah.
people think that was a spontaneous uprising. It was on television. Yeah. It must have been known it was going to happen. The whole thing was televised.
Well, I have to disagree with you there.
Okay, that's all right. That's okay.
I mean, I know Yeltsin. I worked with him on
okay.
some projects
in
the Soviet Union.
Paul?
Well,
we have to take a break here.
Just take a break.
It's going to be for about 3 minutes. And
all right.
And I'm not going to, you know, pursue this. because I didn't ask you to come on to debate these kinds of things. I'd like to get into the book.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188. If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on FirstAmendmentRadio.com are listener-supported. Don't do internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
If you read the history books, the most often asked questions of Southerners was this: why did you fight? And the most often given answer is, because you're here. In other words, the South did not invade the North invaded the South.
Was it the Civil War or War of Federal Aggression? John Weaver sets the record straight in this DVD series on the Civil War from the Old Paths Christian History Conference. Was there a war to set the slaves free? Or was it a war to enslave us all? Get this DVD and judge for yourself. War of Federal Aggression. Get this DVD presentation for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Call 559-781-3773. The truth seems strange only because we've been indoctrinated with a fiction. War of Federal Aggression. Get it today.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're back on. Paul Von Ward is our guest tonight, and this is, I don't know about you, but this has just been wonderful for me. And, of course,
I'm always stimulated by such questions.
Oh, yes, and not only that, but our listeners, knowing me, know that, you know, one little thing will come up and my mind explodes with about 1,000 questions, Paul. So what we're going to do is our last part of our conversation. We'll do that another time, maybe, I hope.
Sure.
But what I really want to do is get into the book, because this is an area that we have not delved into. I've brought it up. And yet, I can't relate to our listeners the way that the evidence is laid out in God's genes and consciousness. And before we go any further, let me let our listeners know, that book, it's only $12, Paul?
Yeah, it's even less, it's less than that on
11
the
something.
Yeah,
11
right.
something. This is a 400 page book.
Don't frighten people off.
Well, that's not it isn't. Oh, wait, you couldn't frighten some. Well, maybe. Okay, I don't want to frighten our listeners off. But this book, I've talked to our listeners about Douglas Reed's book, The Controversy of Zion. I read excerpts of that book to them. You cannot describe the book. You could not. They cannot learn from just a few excerpts because the book is laid out in a way that it just makes all the sense in the world. And I told our listeners at that time, if I could, if I had the authority to require reading for you and I could only require one book, it would be Controversy of Zion. This is God's genes and consciousness is the same way. Actually, for me, it's almost becomes a research book. I get a question in my mind, and I think, wait a minute, and I go back into the book. I find my highlights. I read again, and it's just it puts pieces into the puzzle. One of the big ones for me, and it's. I'm still not really sure, actually, to tell you the truth, you know, even from reading the book. There are so many different colors and races of people in, well, four, five, whatever, in the categories they're in. And I wonder, because I can easily accept the possibility, probability, that this planet has been visited. And there's been genetic manipulation going on. But then, then the next question that comes to my mind is, well, how many different beings were here to give us, you know, slant eyes and yellowish skin and long shins and black skin? And you understand what I'm saying? There's such a diversion here. Okay,
sure.
I'll stop. Do I have a question here that is answerable?
Well, I think what I want to do before dealing with any one of the specific differences or any one of the specific influences of what I call ABs, or more advanced beings, on human history.
Okay.
Because that's the subtitle of the book, Intervention by Advanced Beings in Human History.
Yes.
I go back, and I know some of your readers have probably heard of Zachariah Sitchin's work and some other people who have dealt with what I call the intervention hypothesis. This is the hypothesis that human development and human history has been influenced by beings more advanced than we are.
Now, and Paul, when you say advanced beings, though, before you continue, will you give them what you have defined as your idea of an advanced being?
Yes. Well, for me, I use the term advanced being as sort of a neutral term because what I want to do is to have the reader look at all the different categories of beings more advanced than humans that they have heard about. We go to the Bible, you know, you have the Elohim, you have the Anakim, you have various watchers, you have angels, and so on. So those are AB.
And they could take physical form or they could be energetic form.
They can be
spiritual.
Other dimensional, flesh and blood in our 4D space time.
So you've just combined them all in your depth. Okay. I just wanted our listeners to understand that when you say the word AB.
And I also include in that the same kinds of reports that we're having today of so-called aliens or ETs, and other words are used for them, ascended masters, the channel beings that various people, you mentioned in your opening, the Course in Miracles. Well, that material was transmitted through a human being from an AB, a being more advanced than humans, passing on information back to us through the channel of a human being.
When I've mentioned this, the Course in Miracles, I've always used the word allegedly, and then I preface that and say, or qualify it and say, as far as I'm concerned, it's out of this world, because I don't know of any thought in this world that could have done that work?
Well, I'm not sure I could say that, but what I accept is that the account that we have of how that material came in, I do say that I believe that it came from a non-physical entity channeling through a physical human being. And, you know, it happens all the time. I mean, Ramtha out in in Washington State. I have a friend, Kevin Ryerson, who is Shirley MacLaine's channel. You know, he channels Atun Ray and other beings. I put all of these, that the Yahweh who appeared not in physical form but invisibly to Moses on Mount Sinai, according to that tradition, Gabriel, who passed on information to Mohammed, who started Islam, Moroni, who passed on information to Joseph Smith to start the Mormon church, on and on. I mean, you have evidences, and in the ancient traditions around the world, whether it's Africa or Latin America or Australia or Siberia, there are the traditions of beings more advanced than humans being involved in the creation and development of mankind, passing on to mankind advanced information and knowledge. You have the story of Noah in the Bible, which is also repeated by many, many different traditions around the world, of similar kinds of interactions between the ABs and humans. Mm-hmm. So the first three chapters of God's Genes and Consciousness sets forth what I think is a reasonable selection of the evidence that suggests that it is a fact in history that humans have had influence from ABs. So that's point number one. Now, then I say in the book, okay, what was the nature of that intervention that seems to be the most important for the kind of societies, the kinds of religions, the kinds of institutions that we have in the world today? And I think that there are probably several different interventions over the millennia on this planet, over the millions of years on this planet in human development. But the one that I picked on as what I think is the most significant one for the things we're talking about is intervention by the group of ABs that are called the Anunnaki in the Sumerian tablets, that are called the Anakim in the Old Testament. And these were a group of beings from another planet who ended up on this planet colonizing parts of it, taking resources from it for their own needs. And about 350,000 years ago, they genetically manipulated Homo erectus, which was where humanity was at that particular time in its evolutionary development, to make them into workers for the mines in South Africa. And those interventions made the shift, made the jump from Homo erectus to what we call today Homo sapiens.
What is Homo sapiens?
Well, Homo sapiens is something that happened a little bit later.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Homo sapiens, and that may very well include in it the Neanderthal and the Cro-Magnon peoples, because
so
those
saying,
are all...
you're saying Homo sapien was before Neanderthal?
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, there are these dates are very elusive because we have a very partial fossil record, and the paleoanthropologists and the archaeologists who have discovered the various bones and tried to date them and put them in classifications and so on, it's not an exact science. So when you see in a popular magazine or newspaper article, you know, that gives these dates, you have to remember, take them with a grain of salt. But generally speaking, we think that Homo sapiens appear about anywhere from 350,000 to 500,000 years ago. depending on, you know, what part of the fossil record we've been able to uncover to this point. Neanderthal is dated from about 300,000 years ago down to about 30,000 years ago. And then Cro-Magnon, of course, was even more recent than the Neanderthal, and they disappeared, at least from the fossil record that we know, about 15,000 years ago. But anyhow, that the first intervention was to, in effect, upgrade Homo erectus to the level of serving as workers in South Africa.
As you put it in your book, slaves.
Well, they were slaves because they had no control over their own destiny.
Right.
They were subservient to these colonizers, just like we Europeans have colonized lesser developed societies on this planet over the last 1,000 years and made slaves of them. That's where we were as a species back about 300, 350,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the story seems to move from out of South Africa into the Middle East about 100,000 years ago. And this is described in the Sumerian text and to some extent in Genesis and the Bible and other texts that I mentioned specifically in the book. What this was is that the Homo sapiens who were slaves and workers and really manual labor tasks in South Africa were then taken to the Middle East in what's known as the Garden of Eden in the biblical and some other traditions. And there they were, their roles were changed. They became much more well-trained in architecture and administrative tasks and agriculture and so on to provide support services for the Anunnaki establishments in Mesopotamia and the Sinai region and that part of the Middle East. And that's when we have a manipulation that led to the Homo sapiens who are now known today as the Caucasoids. And that happened both apparently by genetic manipulation and also by sexual interaction between the ABs and the humans. And this is talked about in the Bible as the sons of the gods had intercourse with the daughters of men and created the giants and other beings. What I'm saying in terms of your question about the race is I don't think we have a lot of evidence on what exactly happened, but I think you had different AB genetic mixing with Homo sapiens in different parts of the world that resulted in very significant racial differences.
I'm sorry. Let me ask this, please.
Mm-hmm.
You see, I read several of Sitchin's books.
Mm-hmm.
My question, I guess, is that if those from the planet, do you pronounce it Nibiru?
Nibiru. Uh-huh.
Nibiru, that's how I've always pronounced it. Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering, in my mind, were there other possible visitors from some other possible place that did, mating or genetic engineering to get all the different colors, and as I mentioned before, or was it all with genetics that they did it? And if it was genetics, did they have that kind of a mix on Nibiru?
Well, I think that there are many stories that suggest that ABs from different planets or different galaxies or even different dimensions have been involved in the development of humans.
Okay.
I think in terms of our races, it seems to me that probably is a result of one generic group of ABs, because basically we humans are all 99.9% the same.
99.9.
our genomes are 99.9% the same. 1/10 of 1% gives us our individual differences. And so if there were significantly different AD interventions
right.
in the human species, I think you would find a greater difference of,
sure.
of DNA.
Okay, thank
and
you.
And so the reason if your listeners then go into that part of the book that looks at the scientific evidence that I think corroborates, and I use the word corroborate, meaning that it supports the notion of the story that I'm telling you.
Yes.
It's not proof that anyone can say this is certainly the answer. But when you do what I did in the book, which is I looked at the fossil record, I looked at the phylogenetic research, geneticists who've been working on the genome and doing all of these comparative studies, and looking at their projections backwards, to figure out when different races seem to come on board, when different blood types seem to come on board, and when different languages arose. And I have the whole section, in the chapter
yeah.
on history of languages, which is a fascinating chapter because it demonstrates, I think, what all of the religious and native traditions tell us, that language was a gift from the gods. And it happens that an institute in Germany...
And when you say the gods, you're talking
those
about...
Those are the ABs.
The ABs, the supernatural...
no, not supernatural.
No,
I don't
what
believe
I'm
in
saying
supernatural.
Is that
yeah.
the gods that were... They became gods, supernatural gods, in people's minds later.
That's perfect. Thank
okay.
you for saying it that way, because the ABs, who are just all very natural beings... They're just as natural as you and I are. They happen to be, in some instances, more advanced physical species. In other instances, they happen to be species that inhabit other dimensions. You know, our current physicists and their theories of string theory and all of that hypothesize multiple dimensions in the universe. And what I'm suggesting is that some of those other dimensions are inhabited by conscious beings, mm-hmm. as well as this dimension that we're in.
Right.
And it's all a natural thing, but your point about they were turned into supernatural beings,
yes.
or they were labeled supernatural beings, that didn't happen, you see, until just a couple of thousand years ago or less, when we had the leaders of religions transfer the idea of these advanced beings as natural beings that humans interacted with, walked with, slept with, talked with, fought with, etc., into some divine realm which was unreachable and untouchable by humans unless you happened to be the high priest.
Right.
And then you could contact them.
Yes, thank you.
So that's the whole story that I have in the two chapters in the book on the development of supernaturalism and how the cults
yep.
that were devoted to these various ABs turned into supernatural religions. So anyhow, that's what I tried to do in the evidence of, looking at the fossil record, the genetic records, language, the alphabets. The alphabets, according to the various cultures, were given to us by the ABs. Saraswati was the AB's name in India that passed on Sanskrit. Toth was the one in Egypt that passed on writing to the Egyptians, and so on. There are different people. Quetzalcoatl
uh-huh.
was the one who gave it to the Central Americans in their tradition.
And I'm looking at the clock right now, and we have probably about 5 or 6 minutes left before we go any further. I started to let our listeners know how they could find you and find the books. And I got myself down a cul-de-sac. Folks, you can go to VonWard.com. And that's Paul's website. And then there's a section on the books, and it takes you over to the publisher. Is it Hampton House?
Hampton Roads.
Hampton Roads,
yeah.
Sorry, yes. And also, Paul's books are available there. Paul, I was shocked when I saw the price on this book, because, you know, the books like this usually are sold for about $30 and people buy them. And I'm just so delighted to tell our listeners that it's 11 something, folks. You can
I wanted that to happen because, you know,
you wanted
I want people to have it and read it, because I really want people to look at this whole picture.
Yes, I do too, Paul. So, folks, Von Ward, VonWard.com.
And then that's V like in Victor.
Oh, V like in Victor, yes, or Victor.
Sometimes people hear V as a V like in boy.
Yes, they do, Von Ward. Folks, I hope you get this book. I just hope you get it. You know, as I told you, Paul, I read some of Sitchin's books.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found out that he matriculated at the London School of Economics. And because of my, as you already probably see, my total, absolute distrust of anything in the elite arena, I said, oh, geez, there's got to be hooks in here. And then, you know, my reasoning comes in, and I think, yeah, but this can't all be false because it makes too much sense. See, it answered dozens of questions that I had. I was 15 years old when I decided to delve into the Old Testament.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the questions that I had when I read Zachariah Sitchin's books, I said, yes, of course, this all makes sense.
Well, none of us have all the answers.
No.
And none of us have the whole picture. But I think that a lot of people now are working on this intervention hypothesis in a very rational, straightforward way.
Yes.
I think that Sitchin and I, and my friend Lloyd Pye, who is one of the intervention hypothesis writers in this country, I think there are enough of us working on it now who are not part of any particular religious orientation, any particular mystical orientation, and we're just looking at the best interpretation of the facts that we can and putting them together.
One of the things I appreciate about God's genes and consciousness is I don't recall reading anywhere that you said something that this is exactly the way it is. You said, well, if this is true, then the evidence points to, and you allow people to deduce for themselves, but you're not becoming a guru to anything, anybody. You're just putting together your research, your reasoning, your logic, and you're laying it out in a beautiful fashion. And I do understand, I know that there is not one book we could ever read that would have all the truth in it, and there could be some mistake. But the truth, I think you said this at the beginning, it's there, it's within us. And I've still got a lot of places. I have a place in my mind, Paul, my top left shelf, I call it.
Mm-hmm.
When I see something, read something, hear something, I don't reject anything unless I absolutely know it isn't. But I just stuff it away up there, and eventually it winds up coming down. It becomes part of my understanding, or I find out that, forget it, let it go.
Right,
and
right, yeah.
You do this in a beautiful fashion. What I wanted to do, and now I've talked this out of time, I would like to talk about the civilization that spring up out of no place, because to me, that was another very convincing. And do you think you could?
Introducing the most efficient gravity filter available. You know, if you were to throw 100 ball bearings at a magnet, most would bounce off. But if you placed them on the magnet, all would stick. The same principle applies in water filtration. Most filtration systems force water through the filter at 60 to 90 PSI, causing water molecules to race through the filter in less than a second. The Berkey Light is different. Water molecules take minutes to pass through.